Welcome back to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this weekend was a big reception for the Stained Glass Art Association based here in Kansas City. A note on the invitation to the party intrigued us. It mentioned that stained glass windows were almost banned in the United States as part of a serious legislative effort. Here to tell us more is Kathy Barnard. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Gina.
What happened in 1979 that created a political controversy around stained glass?
Well, I think the government was cracking down and banning lead from paints and coloration in art. And they also attacked, as I would say attacked, but they were going to ban lead use in the use of stained glass, the construction of stained glass. Lead and a various combination of other metals is what we use to combine the two sheets or two little pieces of glass when you make a stained glass window.
You still do today?
We still do today. The Stained Glass Association of America was actually a organization formed in 1903. It's been operating and meeting and conferences, educating ever since that time. And in 1906, they started a publication called Ornamental Glass. But I think in the 40s, they were decided to become a non-for-profit 501c6. And being a non-for-profit by being a 501c6 is what I understand is that we're a trade organization and that we're able to go to Washington and lobby on issues like this. So the president of the association, as long with some representation from the church, I understand a cardinal was there, was able to go in front of Congress and argue our case.
What were the arguments?
Well, there's no other lead, there's no other metal that is quite as bendable, pliable, malleable as lead to connect and hold all the pieces of stained glass to create our art. And with the cardinal being there, and what we were saying to the government is that the concern with lead in paints is that children would chew on paint chips or ingest the lead. And the cardinal, as he would say, is in churches we have these magnificent stained glass windows, but we're not allowing the children to climb up ladders and chew on the lead or have any kind of contact in that way. And that it would be so sad to start to take out, as they took out lead paint in public buildings, to take out stained glass windows in our churches, public buildings such as Capitol buildings in our state, capitals, the domes, things like that. So Washington listened to us, and we got we saved our lead and part of our industry, our craft.
So it wasn't just that new stained glass was in jeopardy of being created. It was also that these historic stained glass works of art from other buildings that had been created over years and years, that those were in danger of being torn down?
Yes. As I understand it, they were in jeopardy of being taken out of the churches, just as the lead was in being instructed to be taken out or covered over.
That would have been devastating, I think,
if you think about it.
Did it affect practicing stained glass artists at the time, or was it just, you know, was it just the existing stained glass that was in peril?
Well, it was a future of stained glass as well as to what you would use, what would replace that lead, that component in the metal. In the past, there's also metals that you have used to connect the glass, and it's zinc. And it's just not the same. It's not soft. It's not able to go around corners and create this wonderful flow of glass. It also, I think, and I think that it's in conjunction with this time that they looked at lead in the stained glass studios and created laws and with OSHA, along with OSHA, and rules of using the lead in the studios and the actual studio artists and craftsmen practices within the studio. Like no smoking creating and working on glass at the same time, eating in a separate place. Because what they were also realizing is just the stained glass artists that would touch that lead would ingest it. And so in the larger studios, we now have blood tests, and you keep that on record.
Wow.
To make sure that your craftsmen, your workers are not getting too much lead exposure.
So the people most in danger from the lead in stained glass windows are stained glass artists.
Absolutely.
What is life like for stained glass artists working today? Are there a lot of people doing this?
There are a lot, but I think as we have looked at our association, we also publish a magazine. Like I said, it's been published in some form or another as a trade magazine, as an education magazine, as just acknowledging new artists and showing people new techniques since 1906. And in the 1980s, we had over 4,000 subscriptions. Now we have less than 1,000.
Whoa, that's a short time for things to change that much.
It is. I think it's the issue of print and whether magazines are still viable, print magazines, if everything's gone to the internet or not. But what we're finding is that our numbers are increasing now. We just designed our magazine after 15 years, and people are excited about the new format.
So you think it's about subscriptions to magazines more than interest in stained glass?
I think it's both. I really do. I think also there was a resurgence of art glass in the 70s, and it had to do with a book by Otto Regan called New Art Glass. And he featured a lot of stained glass artists in California that were kind of breaking traditional methods of glass. They weren't just doing glass for churches. They wanted to do glass as art, autonomous art pieces. Autonomous means perhaps that you don't really have a client or a site-specific place where that stained glass window is going to go, like a church or an altar or a home, that you would create a piece, an art piece in glass that would, say, go to a gallery and or go to a museum.
This was just be a sculptural vision.
Be a sculptural piece that might go outside. I'm starting to do sculptural pieces myself that live outdoors and stand alone. They're not attached to a building, which is a really different mindset for glass. And in the 70s, it really had a resurgence. And I think the 80s, I think that was the print to internet kind of 80s on to 90s kind of.
Yeah. Well, how did you get into stained glass?
I kind of think back, and I think back, I used to call it my mother's poor man's stained glass windows. And she would take liquor decanters, if they were empty, and fill them with colored water and put them in our dining room window or our living room window. And the sun would come through and shoot colors across our room. And I played in those colors, and I thought it was amazing. The man next door to us worked for public TV, Channel 19, and he did as a hobby stained glass. And I used to play with his little cutoffs and put them in my windows. But I think, if you really go back, way far back, our church actually did not have any stained glass windows. It was a brand new building in the 70s, and it was a different architectural style, and unfortunately, we had no stained glass windows.
But it sounds like for you, and maybe for your mom too in her own way, that it's a lot about the way light is traveling through this, the way light travels through color.
I think that's what stained glass is all about. It's all about the light and how it changes, and it changes the space that you're in. And, when stained glass windows were kind of traditionally in churches, I would say, to begin with. And some of their purpose is to create a sense of sacred, a sense of peacefulness in that space. Also, to tell stories. And I think the priests, the ministers at the time would ask the artists to illustrate the stories of the Bible so that they could go from window to window to window and take the congregation through different stories that perhaps they weren't necessarily reading in the Bible.
Do your works tell stories?
I love to tell stories. I love to draw and I love to create. I majored in graphic design and illustration. I was a student at the Kansas City Art Institute as well as KU, and I majored in graphic design and illustration. And when I worked at Hallmark right after graduating from KU, but I started experimenting in sandblasting and carving wood, and it translated into carving in glass. And I think through my illustrations, I love to tell stories. I love to create pieces with people. I love to create pieces for the individual site, architectural site.
Are there a lot of people in Kansas City practicing stained glass art?
There are in Kansas City. Not so many that are carving in glass. I actually started out carving in glass and sandblasting until one client asked me, she goes, I love your work, but I want color. So I sought out some stained glass artists that were working for Gilbert Robinson at the time. Gilbert Robinson was a restaurant chain that was based here in Kansas City. And in 1979, I started doing carvings for the restaurants all over the United States. And they had a stained glass studio here in Kansas City. So I worked with some of the artists there and created a stained glass window. And at that time, it was 1980, and the Stained Glass Association had their summer conference here in Kansas City at Crown Center. And they filled the glass wall, that curtain wall to the east side, with glass from artists all over the United States. I went a couple of days to that conference, and I was so intrigued and so excited with glass that I went back and asked for a leave of absence from Hallmark to apprentice with some stained glass artists here in Kansas City.
Wow, so that was really transformative. You see so much stained glass in Europe. Is the history of the art form different there?
I think in Europe, the history of the art glass, I think actually perhaps the history of traditional studios in Europe is a little bit different than here.
Explain that.
In Europe, you have a very distinguished, as I understand it, you have a very distinguished class structure when you go into a studio. You start out as an apprentice, maybe sweep the floors for a year. Then you start in, maybe you get to move the glass around. Then you maybe get to cut glass. And it isn't until the end, you maybe, end of your maybe 5 or 6 years, you go up through to different journeymen, apprenticemen, and master crafts, master cutter, before you get to do the whole thing, designing and constructing the glass. And in the United States, I see that the first stained glass studios that perhaps started in the maybe East Coast and moved across to St. Louis and across through the years, they started out a bit with that tradition. But I think the more newly formed studios are starting out as without that distinction of who does what and how long it will take and how long you have to be in that certain niche to get certified or accredited to go up a bit higher. And that's one thing that the organization of the Stained Glass Association likes to uphold and educate people through those traditions so that we maintain a high standards of the craft, so the windows that are being built are structurally sound, and that the studios have that knowledge so that the windows will be made properly.
Quickly, Kathy, what do you think is the future of stained glass art in the United States in particular? Is there a new direction?
I hope there's a fabulous direction, a fabulous life for it. On the East Coast in Portland and in Washington State, there's Pilchuk Art School, there's Bullseye Art Glass, Euroboros. There's different handmade glass, hand-blown glass studios starting. They're creating state-of-the-art schools and classes, and Corning in New York has fabulous classes. And so I think it's becoming more popular, and I think we have a good future.
Kathy Bernard, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Last night, I went to a David Bowie tribute called The Band That Fell to Earth. It was at the Uptown Theater, which was not the original plan. The Deli Magazine's Michelle Bacon organized what she thought would be a little show at Knuckleheads back in early December. Then David Bowie died and demand went through the roof. The show sold out, so the musicians got a stage in a bigger venue to make room for this event that had become huge, giving local Bowie fans a sense of togetherness. That's Nathan Corsi singing David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust with The Band That Fell to Earth last night at the Uptown. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that brings today's show to an end. To listen back to anything you've heard, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. You can subscribe to our podcast while you're there. Tomorrow, a few different developments have sparked debates about mom-and-pop shops versus big-box stores, what works best in the suburbs. Join that conversation tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Stick around for up-to-date and the Iowa caucuses.